It can happen on both
the physical and mental levels. So we still have doubts. And when one becomes self-realized, we're no longer entangled with this doubting, because we actually become a witness to our activities. And this is what's reflected here. And it's also clearly reflected in the previous verse, where Krishna says, an enlightened person fixed in detachment engages his body in lying down, sitting, walking, bathing, seeing, touching, smelling, eating, hearing, and so on, but is never entangled by such activities. Indeed, remaining as a witness to all bodily function, he merely engages his body senses with the objects and does not become entangled like an unintelligent person. So an intelligent person witnesses themselves. And this is something that some yoga groups and some different paths of enlightenment think that this is a major thing, to be able to have this witnessing effect. But all of us do it. As we progress in our Krishna consciousness, we see ourselves separate from this material world, and it's incumbent upon us to actually practice this witnessing. You can physically do it. It's an exercise that we can do, that we remove ourselves from the situation. And in our daily life, we have to be constantly attentive as to how we can witness ourselves performing activities in this material world. We can do it. Say, for a classic example, anger arises so quickly if we're caught in a traffic jam, right? It's the first thing. We're all in that, you know, like, oh, why did that crazy woman do that? If we check ourselves with intelligence, if we check ourselves and say, hang on a tip, let me just back off and can take this on a calm and easy level, then we can actually make progress. So we're actually applying this witnessing. Last night I give a class at a yoga centre on Bhagavad Gita, and we were studying the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And that second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's the summary of the Gita, and in that summary of the Gita, Krishna explains that the most important part is to be detached from material sense gratification, to be the witness to what's going on in the material world. This is very, very important. The part that we were reading was in chapter 2. If I can just read it out to you. It's that verse, Nebikramas Nastosi, which is, in this endeavour there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Prabhupada points out, activities in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activities finds no impediment, nor can the small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed. We were coming to this point. Otherwise, the whole attempt becomes a failure. I was pointing out to the people, because they found this hard to understand, when we have something in the material world, we have to see it through to completion before we actually recognize that there was an accomplishment. But in the spiritual world, we just have to make an attempt at spiritual life, and that in itself is a great benefit to us. There's no loss, even if we didn't make it, even if we didn't fulfill it, the task set aside, there is no loss. So, and that knowledge, understanding that even if I do it a little bit, it'll be of great benefit, brings about a great peace and a great satisfaction. It brings joy, it brings happiness, and it brings peace. It's pointed out in this purport that an intelligent person retires from the world of matter. So we actually remove ourselves from the point of matter. And we can physically do that in a very simple way. Material happiness, we know, can be experienced through the different modes. You have happiness in the mode of ignorance. We see that all the time. If you go through the city, there are people that are drunkards, that are harmful to people, that are very slovenly and very sleepy and so on and so forth. That's in ignorance. In passion, we see that also, in sport and dancing and excitement and so on and so forth. In goodness, doing good to people, doing artistic pursuits, poetry and so on and so forth. Research has shown that if a person practices the art of trying to be happy in the mode of goodness, they're willing to reach out to people, to be better people. So Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita that it's important that for the first stepping stone to self-realization, to realization, is to be in the mode of goodness. So they understand that if a person is trying to achieve happiness in the mode of goodness, that's great for other people, because they start to want to feel and help people and so on and so forth. But all material health happiness ultimately causes our suffering. All material happiness, anything that we strive for materially, ultimately causes our unhappiness. And to avoid any sort of suffering, one must be like, it's pointed out here, like the sun, not attached. The sun shines in all the different reservoirs, but is not involved or engrossed by the water. To be non-attached, to practice this non-attachment, brings about no doubts, and one experiences real happiness. We should be dhira, restrain our mind, as is pointed here again also, that the sage actually holds this consciousness very, very strong, dhira, holds it very, very tightly. A simple way to transcend this doubting and this process of passion and ignorance, and to actually eliminate our doubts on a regular basis, does anybody know what that is, that simple process? How can I please Krishna? If we understand that Krishna is actually the controller of everything, he's the creator of everything, the Shastras point out, just by pleasing Krishna, we will experience the greatest happiness that we can ever possibly imagine. Material happiness only brings about suffering. There was an interesting scenario. Material happiness often promises so much to the conditioned soul, you know. And I remember specifically when I was reading this, in my own experience as a young person, in the 70s, if you were growing up in the 70s, it was like now it's the internet and being addicted to the internet. But in the 70s, it was the experience of trying experimental drugs. And being an art student, people were saying to me, look, the greatest bliss is to be had if you smoke this particular type of drug. And being a young, ignorant person, searching for happiness, because all of us are somehow or other trying to find happiness, and if we search it out in the material world, we'll end up in suffering. A classic example of this was, they offered me this intoxicant, and I said, will this bring about, oh, you've got no idea how blissful this is. So I said, okay, I'll try it. And I tried this intoxicant, and all of a sudden, if you've never ever experienced an experience like an intoxicated state, it was blissful for a period of time. The carpet was about that thick, and I was walking around. It was just completely out of control, mode of ignorance. But a fleeting little bit of material happiness was there. And then the cause and effect, the other side of it, had to come. And immediately, what this drug was actually laced with was with horse tranquilizer. And the police had been trying to stop people from taking this drug, and had added a horse tranquilizer to this drug. So you would have some euphoria for a very short time, but then afterwards you would come down and have a very bad experience. So you had the extreme pleasure, and then all of a sudden you had the extreme pain. It was hellish. I was in a situation where I couldn't move. I couldn't move one muscle. If I moved one muscle, I'd have to vomit. It was if there was some sort of a gun or something, I would have just preferred to have ended my life. It was so horrific. So, if we practice and if we keep our energy serving Krishna, and understand, freeing ourselves, understanding that we do our activities not for the pleasure of ourselves, not the I want consciousness, but the we want to please Krishna consciousness. How can we please Krishna consciousness? Then that brings about a great, great happiness. And that happiness is actually guaranteed by Krishna himself. Because some people may read this verse and say, well, why the heck should I? What's in it for me? material happiness. Okay, there may be some dark side to material happiness, but you know, what's so good about spiritual life? Spiritual life is all fulfilling. It's all blissful. And we have to also search that out. Pleasing Krishna is one of the nicest things that one can do. And when one makes that endeavor to serve Krishna, there is absolutely no bad effect after it. And anything that we do, like that verse was saying, any little action that we do is of great consequence and is great satisfaction. An example that was brought to mind just recently, I was talking with Aniruddha Prabhu, and we were talking about different adventures and ventures that Bhakti and I had done in our life 30 years as a devotee. And we tried in different ways to present Krishna consciousness in different centers and so on and so forth, and they met with, not necessarily, the greatest of success due to different reasons. But the point was, it didn't make any difference. Now, if a materialist was setting up a business venture or did something, there would be some anxiety or, you know, oh God, we didn't make it, and so on and so forth. But in spiritual life, we understand that even if we didn't make it, it doesn't matter. The effort was there, the attempt was there, and Krishna recognizes that. Krishna is actually, there's no loss of diminution. Krishna is pleased if we try. If we try. Ironically, our unhappiness is our attempt to be happy without Krishna. So our unhappiness is our attempt to be happy without Krishna. Now there was one section of Srimad Bhagavad Gita that I wanted to read in regards to this, and it's in chapter 5. If bear with me for a tick. Chapter 5, text 22. The translation is, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with material senses, O son of Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and a wise man does not delight in them. The purport is, material sense pleasures are due to the contact with the material senses, which are all temporary because the body is temporary. So pleasures and pain and everything are temporary because the body is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well that the joys of transcendental pleasure, how can liberated souls agree to enjoy false pleasure? In the Padma Purana it is said, the mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the absolute truth, and therefore the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is also known as Rama. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is also said, my dear sons, there is no reason to labour very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to stool-eating hogs. Rather you should go undergo penance in this life by which your existence will be purified. And as a result you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental pleasure. Therefore, those who are true yogis or learned transcendentalists are not attached by sense pleasures, which are the cause of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. So the more we are addicted to material pleasures, the more we are trapped with material miseries. So if one takes to material enjoyment, they have to own up to the suffering. Now sometimes someone can say, yeah, but you're happy in your Krishna consciousness. Is there also going to be a dark side to the happiness that we experience in Krishna consciousness? No, it doesn't, because service in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord, keeping this in mind, how can I please Krishna? Service to the Lord is unmotivated. We're trying not to be motivated. We are there simply to serve the Supreme Lord. It's unmotivated service to the Lord. So the happiness that comes is simply coming of its own accord. The Lord's mercy is upon us. So if we're dressing the deities very nicely or we're performing sankirtan very nicely, we're not motivated somehow or other for ourselves. We are motivated in serving and trying to please Krishna. Now that service in itself becomes extremely fulfilling and very pleasurable, and it brings about a happiness which is beyond the understanding of a normal person. And that happiness is something that is just absolutely unique. And it's ongoing and ever increasing. There's never any cessation to it. It can only increase more and more and more and more and more. It's very, very joyful to perform devotional service. It's exciting. It's an adventure. And who doesn't want an exciting adventure in preaching Krishna consciousness? We're grateful to the Lord that we get an opportunity to engage in His service, to please Krishna, because we understand that the pleasure that we derive from that is so much greater than any material experience, any material pleasurable experience. Thus, we're able to give up very easily, like it says here, that the sage can renounce, retire from material. That's why it's very easy for a devotee to give up these so-called material pleasures. Very easy. Because there is no comparison. And a person from the very beginning gets a taste, a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. From the very beginning. Krishna makes an especial effort to give you just that little extra boost. You know, when we were first approached to become Hare Krishnas, and I've mentioned this before with Julan Yatra coming up, the first time I ever came to the temple was the Julan Yatra festival. And this was Bhaktadas, the artist, the hippie, the whatever. And I remember Sanghanath was here and some other devotees were here, and I had an opportunity. I really didn't know what the hell was going on. But here we were in this temple room, and these people were swinging this little deity, you know. And they came up to me, "Bert, would you like to have a swing of the deity?" I said, "Yes, I'll swing the deity, you know. Anything for a buzz, you know." And then I was swinging the deities, and a little right around his eyes just mesmerized me as we sing. "This is really beautiful." And you got just a little taste. So now Julan Yatra is coming up. You'll see so many people. One of my favorite services at Julan Yatra is to stand there and help people swing the deities and watch their eyes. Anybody had that opportunity to do that service? Watch the eyes of people as they're watching Radha and Krishna. Because especially a new person, and we've got to invite as many new people and our friends to come. Because when they're swinging the deities, they're, wow, little Radha and Krishna. You know? And you watch their eyes and they're so filled with pleasure. It's just absorbing them, and Krishna is hypnotizing them into this understanding that this is real pleasure. This is where you should be forever. And you see it starting to spark. It's absolutely a wonderful pastime. So there's so many different relishable pastimes. Need I mention prasadam? Again, the early experiences in Krishna consciousness. The first time you've tasted prasadam. Now, I was a vegetarian before I became a devotee. And, you know, vegetarianism is okay. But I never, ever experienced prasadam before. And I was so overwhelmed when I had my first plate of prasadam that I gave a huge donation and reminded Swami at that stage that, "You sure you want to give that much?" This is far out. Yeah. So there are so many tastes within Krishna consciousness that completely make material sense gratification insignificant. So as it's pointed out here, serving Krishna is fun and exciting, and advancement is a progressive thing. It is not something that happens immediately. The doubts don't disappear immediately. They do start to disappear because of our conditioning. As I mentioned, we have our doubts. They do disappear, but it happens generally in a regulated, progressive sort of way. It'll happen slowly but surely. So there is this interesting analogy. It's said here that the devotee, where was that? Such an expert cuts all doubts to pieces and is completely, where was that? By awakening Krishna consciousness, one completely retires from illusory sense gratification, becomes absorbed in progressive realization of the soul, as revealed as an example in the two birds. There was one point here. The unlimited experience of material objects only increases one's anxiety, whereas the perception of the absolute truth immediately brings about a platform of peace. The fact is that one has to be completely absorbed. It might have been in the actual verse. It's about becoming expert. Oh, right. With expert vision, sharpened by detachment, the self-realized soul cuts all doubts to pieces through knowledge of the self and completely withdraws its consciousness from the expansion of material variety. A great analogy that I heard recently is about light. About light. There are all different types of lights. You have incandescent lights. You have so many different lights that we utilize. Devotional service can be seen as a light. It is enlightening us. And we can intensify a light, you know? We can put up the wattage on a light to see things clearer. And the final powerful light would be a laser light. Now, a laser light is concentrated light. And that laser light can burn through things. It can heal things. It can very powerful. So our devotional service should be like a laser light, not just an incandescent light that we take the devotional service and we think, oh yeah, this is all nice, and we're progressing very slowly. If we intensify our process of devotional service, if we intensify our focus, fighting against material sense gratification and working to please Krishna, we can actually make faster progress in our devotional career and make faster advancement towards Krishna and are able to better please Krishna. So it's important that we actually become very busy in Krishna consciousness. Not that we have a lackadaisical attitude towards devotional service. We have to force ourselves to remain busy in Krishna consciousness. When you see the lifetime of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada was constantly busy in devotional service. This is also incumbent upon us to be busy in devotional service, to remain active, because that activity of serving the Supreme Lord cuts asunder our doubts. If we take it on a leisurely sort of basis, then the doubts will remain still. So we have to use the laser force light in our devotional service. And the best way to do that is to advance this movement of Krishna consciousness in whichever way we can. Be an asset to Srila Prabhupada. We saw from Prabhupada's legacy how busy he was in those 12 years that he was here in the Western world. How busy he was setting up so many preaching centers, so much teaching, so much vibrant preaching went on. Prabhupada was constantly engaged in trying to help people. So we have to somehow or other stay busy in the movement of Krishna consciousness, always thinking, how can we help Srila Prabhupada? Because to please Krishna is to please his devotee. And so when we please Krishna, we please Srila Prabhupada, we please our Guru Maharaj, and we please the Vaishnavas. One thing that I'd like to bring up as a point of discussion and a point of thought is that I've been asked to help with the Sunday Feast program. And while we've got a lot of devotees here, I thought it'd be interesting to just bring this up. This Sunday Feast program is, and I'm as guilty as anything, it's been neglected a little bit. And we're hoping, you know, that we can pick it up a little bit. Because if we're looking at the service that Prabhupada really emphatically was enthused about, it was the Sunday Feast program. This was the first program that Prabhupada set up. And we, as disciples of Srila Prabhupada and grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we have to take to heart this program. And what did Prabhupada require that we do at a Sunday Feast program? We welcome people to Krishna consciousness. For a lot of people, this is their first experience in meeting the devotees. And so we have to actually see that, you know, when we have people, guests coming to our house, what do? Do we wear the oldest clothes that we've got? No, we wear the best clothes that we've got. Do we welcome them, or do we just put them in the lounge room and walk out the door and say, look after yourself, guys, come on. No, we look after them. We make sure they're comfortable, are they comfortably seated, are they being looked after, and so on and so forth. So the Sunday feast is our program where we welcome people to our home, Krishna's home. We live with Krishna. This is Krishna's home, and we welcome people to Krishna's home. So somehow or other, we have to be really mindful that this Sunday feast program is our outreach, and we're helping people come to the Krishna conscious point of view. So some of the areas that need a positive little bit of a shake-up. One of the things that Prabhupada always liked was proper kirtan at a Sunday feast program. Now what's happening at the moment is that, you know, a couple of devotees sit there and do a bhajan, a very nice bhajan. But the Indian devotees come, and like in any other Indian temple, they just stand in front of the deities and rock a little bit. But it's not what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted that we enthusiastically have kirtan of chanting and dancing, showing how we get happiness out of serving the Supreme Lord by chanting, by having kirtan, by singing the glories of His holy name. We need devotees to be here at the Sunday feast at 4:30, dressed in the appropriate garb that Prabhupada liked. Prabhupada liked to see his devotees dressed in dhoti and sari when they're here at the temple. He liked to see the devotees happily engaged in serving the deity by chanting and singing and playing musical instruments nicely. When that is there, then that is an attractive thing for the visitors that we're going to get. That's the first and foremost thing. Afterwards, they have an opportunity to hear a class. We make the best arrangements for people to be comfortable when they're hearing this knowledge of Krishna consciousness for the first time, for some of them. We have to make that experience a very relishable experience. And then afterwards we have to have sumptuous prasadam that we can serve to them. Now the devotees sometimes have their prasadam somewhere else. It would be an idea that you have some prasadam beforehand so you can talk to the people that have come that night, that special night, this Sunday feast night. And to talk to them, to encourage them, find out about them, find out their pastimes, what their job is, how they, you know, and encourage them in their Krishna consciousness. Preach to them. Each one of us that's sitting here, that comes to Bhagavatam class, has some knowledge of Krishna consciousness, and we should be able to pass that on. We don't want to hold this knowledge for ourselves. Prabhupada didn't want to keep the Krishna consciousness for himself. He didn't want to stay in Vrindavan and just keep it bottled up for himself, although he was blissfully happy doing that. Our movement is a preaching movement, a movement. It's on the move. And so it's incumbent upon us to actually take the instructions of Guru and really present the Sunday feast in a way that is really attractive to people when they come. It's a minor thing that I thought I'd just mention. So I'm encouraging people, if you could please help the management team here in Melbourne to actually pick up this Sunday feast program and make it something very exceptional. With everybody participating in a really nice kirtan, there are so many nice boys and girls that are coming, men and women that are coming. They want to see the devotees who have been devotees for some time really see how happy are they. People will taste the Krishna consciousness if they see that you are happy in what you're doing. If you're not here, how can they see if you're happy? So they're wondering, well, where are they? Or what's the? It's nice here, but you know, we have to be here to help them and to show them how ecstatic Krishna consciousness can be. And then, by giving them knowledge, you start to remove the doubts of their life, and you give them an alternative to material sense gratification. Just like last night when I did the Bhagavad Gita class, these are all yoga teachers that want to know about the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Now, I mean, they're doing yoga, but they have no idea why they're doing all these asanas, you know. And when you start to talk to them about their constitutional position and about how the Supreme Lord is the creator of everything, and that material sense gratification is only a minor point of enjoyment, there's much greater spiritual enjoyment to be had,
their eyes light up and they're enthusiastic to learn more. Generally speaking, people are very enthusiastic to learn about spiritual subject matter. And we are so grateful that the Lord has endowed us with this knowledge to be able to pass it on to other people. So we have to put Krishna in the centre of our lives, that everything we do is for His pleasure. We know that if we put Krishna in our heart and put Krishna in the centre of our lives, anything that we do we cannot be hurt by. No pain, no disappointment, no trouble. We are anxiety free, as it's pointed out here. Whereas if we're continuously left in the material world, there is nothing but anxiety. So we prefer to only serve the Lord and try to attain spiritual happiness. The last part here is this, thus one who is intelligent retires from this world of matter and becomes fully realized a Krishna conscious person. So that's for all of us to do. And we can all become Krishna conscious and make rapid advancement by just being focused on how can we please Krishna more and more. So I'll stop here. Has anybody got any questions at all? Or especially about the Sunday feast program? Definitely.
Am I allowed to bring up a doubt?
Yes.
You quote it from the Bhagavad Gita, which says in this endeavor there is no
loss of diminution.
And whatever advancement one makes, it's not lost.
Yeah.
So, even if they haven't completed it.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I've seen. I mean, a lot of the way left the movement, so
mm-hmm.
practicing Krishna consciousness. And I'm just curious, you know, on one hand, that happens because a lot of us here, it's because of the offenses that we do.
Yeah.
So, if someone commits the offenses, do they still, and leave the movement, do they still keep the advancements?
Absolutely.
To the next life.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard it described, Acharya Hridayananda Maharaj explains that also, that there, whatever the highlight of your race consciousness is in your lifetime, so whatever was the pinnacle of your devotional experience and your devotional happiness, it's that point that you remember at the time of your death. And it's from that point that you advance in the next lifetime. So, you know, before that criticism came in or offences came in, that you somehow or other, not you, but that the person left Krishna consciousness, prior to that there must have been some spiritual happiness, some attainment of spiritual consciousness, a growth in one's consciousness. And it's that peak that will be the point of remembrance at the time of death. Krishna will make sure that you're, because it says that you review your whole life. Everybody does. You know how they say that? That your life flashes before you? Well, what you're searching out, because we are creatures that are searching for happiness, is actually a book, because we're doing this interfaith thing. I was reading, and I'm going to be meeting the Dalai Lama when he's there at the Parliament of World Religion. I thought I'd just have a look at one of his books, and one of his books is called The Art of Happiness. And he says that the pursuit of every living entity is to find happiness. Now his idea of happiness is different to Krishna conscious idea of happiness, because he doesn't recognize that there is a Supreme Lord and our duty is to serve him. So we're searching after happiness. So even the materialist in the material world, when their life is ended, they review their life as to what made me the happiest in that lifetime, what desire was fulfilled, and what didn't make happy. So the point of what made you the happiest at the end of your, during that life, is then the forefront. And then you continue on in your next lifetime. So in the spiritual sense, when you've had a spiritual experience, that's why, say for example, when we have a Ratha Yatra, and it's stated that if a person stands up when the Rath cart goes past, that person will achieve a human body in the next lifetime, or at least get a very advancement. Now even if he had an itchy backside and he stood up at that time, he still makes advancement. You know, so this is and at that point, that is the thing that person will remember in his life. If a person comes here for jewel and yatra, and that's the only thing they ever do, they are dragged here under duress, and somebody says, listen, swing the little deities. Oh, yeah, okay, swing the deities. That's nice. At the end of their life, they remember those little eyes of Radharani, and then they progress in their spiritual life next time. So the mercy of the Lord is amazing, and this is what I was pointing out to these people at the Bhagavad Gita class. If we make one step towards the Lord makes 100 steps towards us. He wants us. It's like these birds, like it was pointed out here. The example of the two birds in the tree, both individual souls, the Supreme Personality are completely separate from the gross and subtle material. If one turns one's face to the Lord, recognizing one's eternal dependence on Him, there will be no further suffering or anxiety, even while you're in this material world. So it's that analogy from Bhagavad Gita, the two birds, and Krishna is waiting for you to turn to Him and recognize Him and understand that you're dependent on Him. Now, if it's a little increment that you've experienced, then that's the thing that you remember at your death, and that will continue on. So there's no loss, absolutely no loss. One point that I will mention in that, though, is if for some reason you actually come across a person that's been, due to offences, have left the movement, then we have to be super, super accommodating and friendly to that person, so it makes them comfortable to come back at any stage. And Prabhupada was emphatic about this. He couldn't care less about the offence that the person did, whether they went off with prostitutes or whatever the hell they did, or carried drugs through airports or whatever. Prabhupada was always forgiving, and always, it doesn't matter, that's in the past, come back. And this should be the mood of the devotees. We should welcome people, even if they've made some error in judgment, even if they've had some offence, if there's a little bit of sincerity there, when we fan that sincerity and try to encourage them to take up devotion and service again, and show them that there is actually a great pleasure to be had in devotional service by your personal example. You know? So that's very important. Does that make sense, Prabhu? Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
I have one question. When you said about dream, I'll tell you my experience. This morning I saw Prabhupada standing Tulsi Mahal with everybody.
In your dream?
Yes. Okay, Tulsi Prabhupada. He has given so much mercy to Melbourne. He has made Vrindavan here.
Yeah.
Mayapur, Vrindavan,
Jagannath. It's said that all dreams are just illusory things except when you dream of the spiritual master and Krishna. Then it's real. So all of us, I hope all of us, or some of us, have had a dream of Prabhupada or your spiritual master. Then we understand that, or Krishna, we understand that that's real.
And he was teaching exactly what you are telling. Your sattva buddhi. Ekekur nandana. Not multi-branded, one-pointed devotion.
Yeah. Laser-like devotional service.
He was teaching Mauritius the light of the globe and the light of the sun.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes, I've heard that. But I just want to stress again the importance of the Sunday Feast program. I'm really asking you all, please, to help the management team here in Melbourne to again make the Sunday Feast program a really vibrant, alive program of helping people to come to this Krishna consciousness. So I would really, if you could, and you know, wear nice dhoti kurta. There were only about two people in the kirtan last week, and people that were leading that actually had a dhoti and kurta, and there was a couple of ladies with a sari. We really want all the devotees. Ooh, it's Sunday feast time. We have to be here. This is our time, our show time, you know? Yeah, we may have different services all over the place, and we may have our family and stuff, but we've got to make an effort to be here for a Sunday feast program. Any other comments or questions at all, Prabhupada? That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.